forgot the clicker. It's actually better that I sit over there now, so I don't have to walk so far when I... Can somebody help me? Okay. We get to these faith in action issues, and the stories are so inspiring that we sometimes can be a little overwhelmed by them. You know, we look at David fighting Goliath, and we say, I don't want to fight a giant. With Daniel, I don't really want to spend the night in a lion's den. When we look at Gideon, I'm not ready to lead a nation with a handful of people. I don't want to move to a country that I don't even know. And we'd like to have more faith. And we look at passages like the passage in James chapter 2, verse 17 that says, in the same way, faith by itself, if it's not accompanied by action, is dead. And we look at these dramatic things that we see in Scripture, and we look in our own lives, and we look in our own spirits, and a lot of times we come back from that thinking, I don't measure up. We may be a little overwhelmed by what's taking place in those situations. And so this passage becomes for us very difficult to define, and even more difficult to apply, because I ought to be doing great things. Well, this morning I'd like to take that down a notch. In fact, take it down multiple notches. This is Carrie White Kent, and I've misspelled her name there. She's cited with multiple spellings, but the real, if you go to her website, it's K-E-R-I. Many of you may be familiar with her, but the story that really got me to thinking about this was her story of planting poppy seeds. She likes to have poppies in her flower garden in the springtime, and I wasn't familiar with this at all, but some of you may be. If you're going to plant poppy seeds, you have to plant them in the winter. If you wait till spring, it's too late. And as she tells an interesting story about how there are times when she actually spreads the poppy seeds on top of the snow. And you would think that that wouldn't work at all. And yet, those little bitty tiny seeds that have so little that to make them up, and you know, if you've put them in food or seen them up close, there's an example of one that gives you a little bit of point of reference with a dime. And yet, they grow into these beautiful plants. And what she does is she takes the fact that she plants poppy seeds as an act of faith. Because it doesn't make any sense that it's going to become what it's going to become. And yet, in the winter, every winter, she does that. And as I thought about her story and as I thought about the things that she was trying to teach, I really came to the conclusion that I think that's really true of what we do with faith. It's not that we fight the giant. It's not that we do battle with the lions, although there may be rare occasions when those things happen. But the reality is, for most of us, God is calling us to do the small acts of faith, to have the courage to scatter the poppies in the winter, knowing that there's going to be a harvest. There's going to be a time when those things are actually going to come to fruition. And this morning, as you think about an active faith, I'd really like for you to shift your focus just a little bit. It's not about that great, dramatic, impressive act. But what can I do in a small way that demonstrates that I have faith in my life? The story I'd like to use for a text this morning is 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that he revered the Lord, but now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves." This woman's husband has been a faithful prophet. He's been obedient to God and he's been a support to Elisha. Now he's gone, living in debt. And she's in a place where she's in a really difficult situation. Somebody's going to come and take her two sons away from her. And not only is she going to miss them emotionally and physically, but the people that would provide support for her are going to be gone. Again, emotionally and financially as well. Elisha replied to her, "How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" "Your servant has nothing there at all," she said, "except a small jar of olive oil." Elisha said, "Go around and ask all your neighbors for empty jars. Don't ask for just a few." Then go inside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it to one side. She left him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her, and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another one." But he replied, "There's not a jar left." Then the oil stopped flowing. She went and told the man of God, and he said, "Go sell the oil and pay your debts, and you and your sons can live on what is left." And the reason I like that story so much is, what is she asked to do? Go borrow some jars and take that oil, start pouring them in there. When you look at that, that doesn't compare very favorably to fighting a giant or leading a country. Just a little simple instruction. And yet God does a dramatic thing through that. I asked several people during the course of the week to share with me stories about people who did small things that really were important, but at the same time would really represent these small acts of faith. One that came up was Andrew in John chapter 6. What does Andrew do? Well, they're out there. It's the feeding of the 5,000. Let me see if I can find that verse. Yeah, I'll come back to that one. The feeding of the 5,000. Jesus is challenged to take care of food, and he throws some things out there that causes his disciples to think just a little bit. And then here's Andrew. He pushes this little boy forward, basically. End of verse 8, he spoke up. "Here's a boy with five small barley loaves and two small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" Andrew doesn't say, "Jesus, I know that you can take this happy meal and make it feed everybody." He doesn't step up with the great faith and say that. Instead, he says, "Well, there's this one lunch. Somebody's mom sent their son with packed lunch that day, so that's all the food that they have." And Andrew's not, he's not making this great statement of faith. He's saying, "Well, maybe." And it kind of pushes him forward just a little bit. Read another story of the guy who is writing a Bible story, and I'll go back to. As they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethpage on the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, say that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." I read an interesting article, the headline of which was, "Hot Wiring a Donkey." And when you think about that, you know, Jesus is sending these guys to do a pretty unusual job, a pretty unusual task. It's kind of scary to do that. When I was first in ministry, we were having a big thing at church, and there were three of us, a guy named Wendell and a guy named Harry and myself, and we were in charge of setting up the church for this program. Couldn't start until Friday evening. Took a lot longer than we thought to do the things that we had planned on doing in a couple of hours. Well, anyway, it's after midnight, and we still haven't moved the tables yet. We needed a pickup, and the custodian had told us we could borrow his pickup, and he'd leave it at his house with the key under the mat, floor mat, you know how that goes. So we go over there late at night to get this old, this is the 1970s, it's a 1950s pickup. There's no key in the bottom of it. Well, Harry is an engineering grad from Texas A&M, and he says, "I think I could hotwire this old truck." So that's what starts happening, you know. Of course, I'm just standing there. I'm not doing anything at all until the red and blue lights show up in the driveway. The neighbor has called the police and said, "There's people stealing my neighbor's old pickup truck." We thought we were all going to jail, and the officer says, "What's going on?" And said, "Well, the guy loaned us his pickup, but he forgot to leave the key. And we're moving all this stuff at the church." And he said, "I think I know how to wire a pickup." And so he actually hotwired it for us. And Harry drove off in it as Wendell and I followed him. Now, I did notice that he followed us to the church, and he sat out there until we started bringing tables out. But think about this disciple for a minute. These guys are sent, and they're like, "Well, what if somebody says something to us? Jesus told us to get a donkey that doesn't belong to us." I mean,
what if it's a Pharisee's donkey? Or what if it's one of the Jewish leaders' donkey? We could get in all kinds of trouble. We could go to jail. We could have all kinds of difficulties. But instead of backing away, they actually do that. And it works out to be exactly what it was supposed to be. You can look in Scripture over and over again and find places where people are not asked to do dramatic things. They're asked to do something small. And sometimes it develops into something that's much larger. But sometimes that's all it is in and of itself. And this morning, and especially as you go through the week, my challenge would be to try to find those small things that you could do that would demonstrate literally your act of faith. This morning, we'd just like to think in terms of what are some of those small acts of faith that we could do. Sometimes it's a kind word. Sometimes it's maybe to distribute some food. And I've shared with you before about the family that for Thanksgiving, they're working at the Jesus House. And the kids didn't want to go the first year, but then the teenage children didn't want to go do that the first year. But in subsequent years, they didn't want to stop. They wanted to do that. They've continued to do that as adults. A very small thing that started out that moved in a very positive kind of way. Maybe you can assist a senior citizen. The list is literally endless. And if you have a suggestion that you'd like to have shared with this group, let me know, because I'd be glad to put it up on the screen and give this kind of idea so that you could develop them. Because they're everywhere. They're all around us. In looking and researching and thinking about this particular lesson, I read of a family that was really frustrated by the fact that they were having to ignore the request of homeless people. And they didn't like that, and their children didn't like it. Their children were relatively small at the time it started. And so they came up with an idea that they'd take just a Ziploc bag, one of those gallon-sized Ziploc bags, and into it they would put some toiletries, those trial-sized toiletries, toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant, shampoo, soap, and they would keep those, and they would also put in there a gift card to a fast food place, Sonic, Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, Whataburger, somewhere from $10 to $20. And when they encountered a homeless person, they would give them the bag. They put them in their car. They kept several in their car. And as they shared that, they said that the children ultimately started to say, well, we could buy the trial size stuff. And when they'd go to Walmart, they'd love to go over to that section and buy whatever their $2 or $3 would allow them to buy. So they really were a part of that process. There's so many simple, easy things that we can do that literally become our act of faith. I came out of Walmart the other day. That's where I spend most of my time. And there was a guy trying to get out of his car. He was just having a really difficult time. And I was just prepared to walk over there to see if I could help when this other guy came running over there. And he came so quickly that I thought maybe he was going to hurt him in some way, you know. And I'll admit I was being very judgmental because he looked like the kind of person that could and would hurt somebody. But instead he said, can I give you a hand? And he literally lifted him and helped him into the wheelchair so that he could help himself and get on into the store. When you look around, you see people doing those kind of things. And we sometimes think of them as just normal, but they aren't normal. They're acts of faith. They're acts of kindness. They're response to what God is asking us to do. We can involve our families. We can certainly involve our children and our grandchildren in that action. In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. We constantly have that opportunity. Let me share with you another story that I like. This family had received in the early evening a call, and the call was about a tragedy that occurred in the family. The wife's, several people in the wife's family had been killed in a car accident. And the word spread quickly among their church family, and various people came to offer condolences and provide various things. And the woman who writes the article said that somebody came to the door. She went there, and standing there was a man from church that really they had never talked to before, primarily because the man didn't really have a lot of conversation. He kind of went to church and stuck to himself, and he liked to kind of hang around, but he didn't really have a lot of social skills and a lot of social interaction. And in his hand, he's carrying a wooden box, and he says simply, "I've come to polish your shoes." And he came in, he asked everybody in the family to bring to him the shoes that they would wear to the funeral services, and he sat over in one corner, polished all the shoes, and left. And as she tells about that incident, it's 20 to 25 years after that time. And she says, "The person I remember is the man who came to polish the shoes. I have this broad image of people helping, but I remember this one guy." And that was a simple act of faith on his behalf. Zechariah. Don't have it up there. There we go. Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10, passage that we use for many, many times. Who despises the day of small things? You know, a lot of times we sit back at the end of the day and say, nothing happened today. You know, there wasn't anything that really makes this a day to stand out. Well, sometimes that's a huge blessing because we don't know what could have happened that would have been negative, that we've been protected from. But we also often are discounting the encouraging words, the building of relationships, the actions that started things that could continue to roll, the things that make people feel good, things that make people feel right, the little tiny acts of faith and kindness that we are doing to and for each other. Sometimes they become so habitual and routine that we don't even mark them and we don't even think about them nearly as much as we should have. I don't know, how many of you have been to Andy's? I don't know if there's more than one of them in Oklahoma City. Some of you are shaking your heads like, yeah, that's a really good place. It's out on the Penn just past what would be 33rd coming out of Edmond. And it's a really bad place for us because we go that way every Wednesday night and have a tendency to stop in there from time to time. If you've not been there, you don't want to go because it's just another temptation that you have to face. And besides, the lines are already pretty long. But we had been there a couple of weeks ago on a Wednesday night, and there was a group of kids out there, teenage kids, college kids, I guess would be a better application. And they were just into all kinds of mischief. They were talking with really foul language, and the things they were talking about it made you just uncomfortable, and you were embarrassed that the children were there. And we really were anxious to pack up and get out of there. Well, a couple of Wednesdays ago, we pulled in, and there's another group, very much like that. And I'm like, oh, no, you know. And Terry said, no, these kids are different. And I said, how? She said, they just look different. They're different. And sure enough, they weren't trouble at all. They were a real cooperative, and that they seemed to enjoy each other. And as we went back to the car to get back in, one of the kids said, Mrs. McElroy. And two of them got up. They were students of hers at OCA. And there was just this 5 minutes or so at the door to the car where they had this discussion about the things they had done in class and the things they had done since and various kinds of things. And it was really kind of a really sweet moment. But as we drove away, Terry said, you know, sometimes you just think the things I've done don't matter, or they don't add up, or they really haven't been all that significant. And then you have those situations where you're reminded that those small acts of faith and kindness and courage and teaching is certainly falls into that category, although it's much more important than we often give it credit for being. You have a tendency to forget, but the development and the growth and all of those things are so positive, and it's really, really so fascinating, and it's truly powerful. Let me share with you a story, and it's a good story, and I'm going to read it. I don't usually do that, but I'm going to do that because I think it loses its punch if I don't. Last November, I found a piece of garbage in my front yard. It was a flattened and torn sky lantern, a sort of mini hot air balloon made out of paper. It was soaked in rain and plastered to the ground. Written on it were these words, "Love you, Dad. Miss you much, Steph." I threw it away, but the words nagged at me throughout the day. I didn't know this person and had no way to contact her. But the thought that she was out there sending a message of love that wouldn't be answered bothered me. I thought and I prayed about it throughout the day. Part of my unrest came from the thought that my own three daughters might someday write a similar note and send it out into the world. It was unbearable for me that they might say, "I love you," and be met only with silence. It seemed to me that such an event would argue that death gets the final word, that death is stronger than love. And I don't believe that. In times of grief, we're all tempted to believe that death is the most powerful force in the universe. It traps us in its orbit, and we can scarcely think of anything else. I wanted to tell Steph, love is as strong as death, an ancient phrase that is a key part of my own faith and is actually a scripture. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verse 6. I love that idea. Not that death is strong, not that love is stronger than death, but as strong. Love transforms. It takes hold of us. It's inevitable and inescapable. So I wrote Steph a letter. It took me a little more than an hour to write the letter. I cried while I wrote it, and I put it on my website before going to bed. It was a small act of faith. It seemed unlikely Steph would ever read it. Over the next few weeks, the letter went viral, and people all over the world did me the small kindness of writing me to tell me about the letter and how it had impacted them, of how the small kindnesses resonated in their own lives. I cleared my schedule for a few days and tried to answer them all. Another small kindness, human connection. In time, Steph saw the letter. I'm still shocked and amazed by this, and I cannot help but think it is more than coincidence. She and I became friends. I flew to her city and spent a few days with her and her family. She shared with me about how those few words of affirmation and love created a change in her life. She was re-examining her relationships, her job, her actions to see if she was living the life of someone worthy of love and respect. The letter had reminded her to live well in the midst of her grief and loss. She did me several small kindnesses as well, not the least of which was telling me that I should write a similar letter to my own daughters so that they would have something from me in the years to come. I'm deeply thankful she saw my daughters in a way I did not and helped me see their need for a greater expression of love. That's the key. An important piece about doing acts of kindness for one another. We must see one another as humans to perform these incredible acts of kindness. It's a wonderful story. And it just reminds us again of how small things can add up to become very big things and dramatically intervene in the lives of individual people. I hope when you look at the next week, you might say to yourself, I'm going to do an act of faith. May not be the greatest thing in the world, doesn't need to be dramatic. That small thing can be important, and God can make it into something that's extremely unique. This morning, we're going to offer an invitation. If you have a need or a desire to respond to that invitation, we'd invite you to make that known as we sing this song together.